This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here, Circus Sports in the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, on the road in Morgantown, getting ready for a little double duty. Always great to have you on, even on the road, Jensen. And you got a big call coming up tomorrow, ESPN. And I do know back in Las Vegas, you'll be center stage at Circus Sports.
We will confirm that with the maestro, Mike Palm. He was gracious enough. Asked him early this week, hey, I got the schedule. What do you think? Let's rock and roll. So if you're coming through around 9 a.m. Pacific, Tom Hart and I center stage there, ESPN2, Kentucky and Wake Forest to kick off the Morgantown Regional on Friday afternoon.
I can guarantee you this. That means here in Kentucky, you will be center stage right behind me here at the Mint Gaming Hall as well, my man. Let's get to it. A lot to get to, including some UFC talk here, some NFL talk. But we have to begin one win away for your Carolina Hurricanes. That's where we begin our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
Jensen, history was made last night. And not in the good way if you're Montreal. They lost four consecutive home games for the first time ever in their historic Stanley Cup post. And it's never happened before, and now it's happened. Four straight losses at the Bell Center here for Montreal. They get shut out yesterday 4-0. Jensen, this thing was over early, a couple quick goals, 3-0 after the first. Frederick Anderson does his job. The defense does their job. And this feels like one-way traffic here, up 3-1.
And pretty much how we said it yesterday, right? We felt the under was certainly the way to go, period. If you were not convinced on a side, to me, it just was a myriad of things in favor of Carolina. By the way, that is the third shutout in 12 postseason games for Frederick Anderson. I know that you have a ticket, what, plus 550 for him on the Conn Smythe?
Yes, sir.
The way it's going, incredible value. He has been Dominic Hasek-esque here at limiting a very high-powered Montreal offense. Credit where it's due. They have taken advantage. Rob Brindamore's crew on the precipice here of punching their ticket to the Stanley Cup final.
Would love to see it again. Mitch Marner still the betting favorite to win the Conn Smythe with VGK sitting in the catbird seat waiting for it, but it feels like Carolina, just a matter of time. They'd have two chances if needed to get this done, but it might only take one with Game 5 on the horizon. Game 6 could be the end tonight for San Antonio. If they don't get a home win and extend this series to 7, it's all over, and then we will get OKC against the New York Knicks. But injuries are a concern for OKC. They did a really good job in Game 5 getting bench contributions. Alex Caruso with 22 off the bench. I don't know that you can count on 22 from a guy like Alex Caruso. You put McCain in the starting lineup, he got you 20, Jensen. This feels like the remedy for no Jalen Williams, no A.J. Mitchell here for OKC, and I wonder if that's going to be the same look that Mark Daigneault implores tonight.
Yeah, we'll kind of pay attention here. The only thing really that I would lean towards tonight is the over. I mentioned it for people just joining the show. For the five games in this series, winning team has scored at least 122 points themselves. The only outlier there, of course, San Antonio in Game 4, 108-82 there. So might be a way to get different, Dave, or creative, another way to make the same bet. But I do like a little bit of the over tonight. We'll wait to see kind of where the market shifts towards this afternoon. Obviously, those injury issues will become paramount on it. But 218.5, if you can find that, still think that's a strong lead for later on tonight.
Well, when we catch up with the maestro, Mike Palm, later on this hour, we'll ask him about some of the needs here for Circa and beyond. I wonder if there's any liability here on either one of these two teams, and wonder about the Knicks now, maybe a shock to the system coming out of the East and the way that they did. How about yesterday, the pitching that we saw in the bigs was fantastic. Christopher Sanchez now, what, over 44 and two-thirds innings here, scoreless streak. That's getting rather historic in and of itself. They get a 3-0 win against San Diego. The Cubs break their 10-game losing skid. Then they get Paul Skeens today. And Dustin May took a no-no into the eighth, and then not only do they not get that, but they don't get the win. Jensen, some really good arms were on display yesterday.
Absolutely. And now the Phillies, again, a couple of games over 500. It has been a renaissance since Don Mattingly took over from Rob Thompson there, and really a club after this sweep now of the San Diego Padres. They look the part up against the Dodgers beginning this weekend in a rematch of the National League Division Series from just a year ago. If you look at the National League divisions, at least a 4.5 game lead for the leaders, the Dodgers in the West, Brewers in the Central, Braves now 8 clear of the Phillies. In the American League, the largest division lead is just 3.5 games. That's the Guardians over the White Sox. The Yankees have pulled now to within a game and a half of the Rays. The Athletics have been leapfrog after Seattle beat them yesterday. Mariners back in first. So some changing dynamics here as we close out the month of May this weekend.
And Shohei Ohtani was brilliant on the bump, even with that dinged hand yesterday. So no problem for Shohei as they get another win against the Rockies as well. It's always interesting with an employer-employee relationship, right? And I think you should love where you work. Hopefully that's the best case scenario. It sounds like that the Great Eight in Baltimore still loves being in Charm City and that they love having him in Baltimore. Let's hear from Lamar. We know he's got contract talks here as he tries to get a new deal out of Steve Bisciotti and company. Here's Lamar on the Ravens way.
Absolutely. I love the Ravens. I love this organization. I love this city. Just the team that drafted me, you know, got a lot of love for me. And I believe, you know, I got a lot of love for the city and this team as well. So, like I told you, the reconstruction is done. Cool with that. But I love Baltimore. Like, everybody should know that by now.
You know, that big smile on his face, too. And I think he does. And there was something in there that you can relate to. He said, they drafted me. There's something about that when somebody takes a chance on you, Jensen, and says, I'm making you my pick, and that there is some loyalty there. And it feels like that still plays out for Lamar all these years later.
Again, it's always, as someone who went through the, didn't have to go through the arbitration process, we avoided arbitration my Super 2 year with the Indians. I've heard horror stories about guys that have gone, had to endure what an employer says about you to try and get you for the cheapest price. Old teammate Kerry Wood, a friend of the show, was a guy that had represented himself too and had a very good relationship with the owner. He didn't even deal with the GM, Dave. He dealt with the owner. It was a couple of phone calls. They were amiable about it. And of course, you know, this is a similar dynamic. Face of the franchise at that point, Kerry Wood with the Cubs. Same dynamic here with Lamar Jackson. You want to make this right. Steve Bisciotti, a businessman at heart, obviously, but also understands where the bread is buttered there. They know they've got to have this dynamic work well. I would expect this thing gets done maybe quicker than last time because they don't want the distraction, especially with a first-year head coach.
Charles Schwab Challenge getting ready to get underway. It's not the best feel that they're going to have on the PGA Tour, but we got Jack's place next week in the U.S. Open in two, so you can understand why there's no Rory and Scotty in a tournament like this. The big Swede is the betting favorite on 10-1, 9-1 out there in the marketplace. I did play the under 68.5 on his first round today here. Jensen laid $1.25 there. You've got some plays as well, and I think we align on a lot of plays this week.
This is going to be great, my friend. Just 5 top 10s for me, and also played all 5 of those guys in the outright markets too. I'm with you on Ludwig this week, 10-1 in the outright market. Also plus $1.15 top 10 finish, including ties on DraftKings. I do like Russell Henley and Justin Thomas this week. Again, great ball strikers. We know Henley, one of the accurate guys on tour. And then maybe some bombs, if you will. Ricky Fowler, Alex Smalley. I think those guys have a chance to be around this weekend. So, hey, let's get at least, if we can get the top 10, at least a couple of those guys and get one winner, we are in great shape headed in to Sunday afternoon.
Pretty good card this weekend here at UFC Macau. Going overseas, you got to get up early to watch these fights here, Jensen. And had Jordan Sherwood on the podcast this week on First Strike. Wherever you get your pods, please like and subscribe. And we were talking, looking into the future a little bit, not just this fight card, but obviously Freedom 250 coming up. And what could be on the horizon could be a blockbuster, and Jordan explains here.
Got to look ahead because I want to get your thoughts. The big news in the last week was the return of the Mac. Conor McGregor's coming back in here, and he's going to fight Max Holloway. The number's coming down a little bit because Max, when this fight opened, I think he was well over a $4, if not close to a $5 betting favorite. So it has come down. They're fighting this fight at 170. I know we haven't seen Conor in forever. We've seen much more Max Holloway. But at 170, what am I missing on Conor McGregor as nearly a $3 betting underdog?
Okay, so I think the objective way to look at it is, A, he's not fighting a grappler. Max is not a grappler, so he's going to get the fight that he can be favored, you know, always to survive in. It's at 170. We've never seen Max at 170 pounds. And, you know, as much of a sitcom slash drama that Conor McGregor's life is outside the octagon, like, the dude still is an athlete and the dude still can fight. Yeah. So that is the reason why it's dropping. Please let it continue to drop, because if it gets to that favorable price on Max Holloway, you know, you fire off a Max Holloway. I think the other thing too about Max is, like, what is left for Max? I think that's the big storyline. We were talking about it on the Unnamed MMA podcast. It's a sad moment when you realize that Max Holloway is likely never going to be competing for a championship again. And he's still 34 years of age. He's losing to the best of the best fighters we have. Conor McGregor's not that.
Okay, check out First Strike, wherever you go, with me and Rob Moreno each week. It was great having Jordan on the program again this week. He went on to say that if Conor gets that win against Max Holloway, which is exactly what Dana White and the organization wants, and Paddy Pimblett somehow could get by Benoit Saint-Denis, that you would put Paddy against Conor, and dare I say, Jensen Lewis, it would be the biggest fight in the history of Europe. I could not think of, I'm going back in history, like Lennox Lewis against Frank Bruno back in the day. They put that at Wembley Stadium. It would be the biggest fight in the history of Europe if Paddy the Batty against Conor McGregor, England against Ireland, the continent would be on fire. Could you even imagine that? So just table that for a little bit, America, and give Europe their day. Okay, when we come back, let's talk some baseball. Daily Diamond, it's up next right here. VSiN, by the way. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
Clock is ticking on one of the best VSiN Pro offers of the entire year. This is your final week to get a VSiN Pro subscription, which is normally $240 for just $199. So when you sign up now, we're going to give you 2 extra months for free. So that is 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use the promo code PRO, P-R-O. You're going to get our daily best bets from all of our hosts and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools and matchup analysis, 24/7 live video, plus full show replays on your time on the VSiN Watch app, plus all of our special edition betting guides. Can't stress this enough, for every major sport throughout the entire year. So yeah, that's going to cover you through college football, the NFL, and back into Major League Baseball next year when Jensen puts together that Major League Baseball betting guide with Adam Burke and company. And again, you'll get that all the way through 14 months. This offer will expire May 31st. So head over to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use that promo code PRO at VSIN.com/subscribe. Jensen Lewis, Dave Ross here with you, and it is a limited slate on a Thursday, Jensen, but we love to do it each and every day, a labor of love. It's time for today's edition of the Daily Diamond. And Jensen, I know one game in particular that people are looking at here might be the White Sox against the Twins. And I just wanted to ask you very quickly about Davis Martin, because it was a great conversation with Greg Peterson earlier in the program as well. Where are you on him as a legit American League Cy Young guy? Is it the notoriety that holds him back, or do you think people with every passing performance will get to know him a little bit better?
Yeah, I don't think you can really deny, Dave, the statistics that he's put together. And just to give you an idea, when you compare him to American League starters right now, if we go through just, you know, pitching wins above replacement, which I traditionally like to do just to kind of sift through some of the noise, only Cam Schlittler has a higher pitching wins above replacement amongst American League pitchers at 2.9 than Davis Martin does at 2.3. If you look at the rest of the guys that currently have a 2 or higher pitching wins above replacement, Joe Ryan of the Minnesota Twins is at 2.1. Kevin Gausman for the Toronto Blue Jays at 2.0. If you're looking at some of the deeper analytical statistics, field independent pitching is one that we really like to look at. You know, that really allows you to kind of see if the actual ERA that guys have is what it should be. Expected ERA is a way to go through that. But field independent pitching really allows you to level the playing field when it comes to evaluating players on both sides. Cam Schlittler, a 190 FIP, a Davis Martin 229 FIP. You look at the expected ERAs, both of them have ones that should be higher. Schlittler has a 150 ERA, but an expected at 255. Davis Martin with a 204 ERA, expected ERA a run and a half higher at 355. So you kind of take a little bit of each. They both do a really good job in strikeouts per nine. Cam Schlittler at 10.13, Davis Martin 9.63. They limit walks really well. Schlittler is at 1.63 walks per nine, Davis Martin at 1.75. So if you're looking at comparisons here, Dave, should Cam Schlittler be the rightful top choice for the American League Cy Young so far? I would agree with that. I had thrown in a 60-1 on or 50-1 on Davis Martin for a long shot AL Cy Young award weeks ago. He's making it stand up right now. He's 7-1 in 10 starts. And again, wins and losses, not necessarily as big of a marker or a differentiator when it really comes down to it. But you can see the odds already down to 30-1 for Davis Martin. It's basically been cut in half. And I agree with the market move. As it stands right now, Dave, we look at this matchup here between the Twins and the White Sox, Kendry Rojas against Davis Martin. When you look at the White Sox as a home favorite, which they'll be today, it is kind of funny to look and see that they've only been a home favorite twice in the major league season. Just think about that with where they've been. They are 1-1 in those scenarios. Looking at some total trends too, I mentioned to you after a loss, and we played that over 8.5 yesterday, the White Sox have been really good. They are 16-11 to the over as a home team. So might be a way to look at it, much more so the White Sox getting to Kendry Rojas and whoever else comes out of that Minnesota pen, more than Davis Martin surrendering to a Twins offense that, you know, has had their inconsistencies here as of late.
And the most disappointing to me, at least in the American League, has been the Kansas City Royals, 12 games under at 22-34. They have the exact same record as the Detroit Tigers. And Jack Flaherty's on the bump today here for the Tigers. And I start to go, Jensen, at some point against Grayson Rodriguez and the Angels, and you got to lay $1.32 on the Motor City Kitties today. Are you going to start looking at Flaherty as trade bait? Like guys like that, if you're 12 games under, like what would be the point of keeping him around? We know the Dodgers, they did this trade a couple years ago, worked out for the Dodgers, and he came back to Detroit. Is that where we're starting to get here with Detroit and some of these frontline starters to go, why would they still be here past the trade deadline?
No, I don't think we're really close to that. And again, a lot of that predicated on where we are as far as the American League period. I mean, if you look at this wild card race, and as I said before, the largest division lead, at least for teams right now in the American League, it's 3.5 for the Guardians over the White Sox in the American League Central. Now the Tigers and the Royals both 10 games behind. And so at this point, you know, remember last year we were looking at a 15.5 game lead for the Tigers over the Guardians. And we know how that all ended up. Just food for thought for you. The Tigers and the Royals begin play just 5 games out of an American League wildcard spot today. So it's really hard for front offices to just sit there and say, oh, well, you know, the year's over, 2 months in, we got to start thinking about trading a Jack Flaherty or Tarik Skubal. I think the thing that would stand out to me more and be a little bit glaring if we're taking just the Tigers and the Royals in a case study, the Royals are minus 47 in the run differential. That is a number that will stick out like a sore thumb. The Tigers aren't great. They're at minus 25. But Dave, think about this. Only the Yankees, at least when you look at where the division leaders are right now, the Rays, the Guardians, and the Mariners, They are all at plus run differentials, and I don't think that is a surprise. Only the New York Yankees, of teams that are fighting for wild card spots, at least at the playoffs started today, the Yankees are plus 89. Every other American League team outside the division leaders has a negative run differential. That's how bad it's been for the American League and the junior circuit as a whole. It has really been, you know, teams that have not played consistently well. So with that in mind, and I know you like to look at the future side of things here, you know, you can kind of look down the board and look at a Baltimore Orioles team that's played a lot better. I mean, they just took it to the Rays and swept them right out of Camden Yards. The Rangers have been hanging around, albeit they're five games under 500. I know you talked about the Astros the other day. I don't know if I can get there with their offense, or at least with their pitching staff. Their offense is fine, but they're minus 41 in the run differential. Until they were to get pitching reinforcements, I don't know if I could buy stock in them. I would look, ironically, Baltimore at minus 41 in the run diff. That's a team that feels like if they need to make moves, Mike Elias at the deadline will do that because of the investment in Alonso, Taylor Ward. You know, they wanted to surround this group with more offense. But I think there's buy low opportunities in the American League for teams, you know, that haven't gotten off to a great start.
Well, I think that's a great way to look at it. Certainly for the boys in Charm City, four games under 500, they begin a series with the Blue Jays. You mentioned they just swept away the Rays. That is intriguing to me because I would look at that and say, well, they pushed some chips in the offseason. Why wouldn't they continue that trend here versus teams that I'm looking that might be on the other side of that equation that we talked about here? With this series continuing or starting today against the Blue Jays, where are we on Baltimore? Not just today, but again, maybe that's a team we could buy on to potentially make a wild card run.
Yeah. Again, they were my pick to win the American League East. You know, if that comes to pass, then they have really turned it around in a big way. Patrick Corbin, Chris Bassett, the matchup today, when you kind of look at where Baltimore has been as a home favorite, and again, just kind of looking at some totals here that kind of stand out, Baltimore 9-7-1 as a home favorite. When you look at Toronto away from Rogers Center, and especially when they are a road underdog, it has been a little bit tougher for them, and it is only 5-4 to the under, but I would back more of the momentum play here and the way that Chris Bassett and this Orioles offense has been. Inconsistencies with where Toronto has been. Yes, Patrick Corbin has been a bit better in recent stretches, but I think you stay with the hot hand. I think the O's might be the play there tonight.
I got to tell you this, too, just looking down and seeing the Blue Jays are odds on to make the postseason at $1.15, and yet you can get plus 230 on Baltimore. I think you know where I'd be putting my money right there if you're looking in the futures market here, as I will be. Certainly, I think with potentially getting more additions to that pitching staff, plus 230 might be the way I'd want to play it if you're looking at those two teams in specifics. Great stuff as always, Jensen. When we come back, going to catch up with the maestro, Mike Palm. And I do wonder about some of the liabilities now that it's starting to crystallize a little bit, certainly in the NHL side of things and the NBA side of things, as we're down to the final three right now in each respective league. Could be down to two as soon as tonight here in the NBA. We'll have that discussion next right here on VSiN by the Books.
By the Books, right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books, and how about this? Circus 2026 football contests are open for business right now. You don't have to live in Vegas to play. After your required in-person registration, Winner's Circle Proxy is going to handle your weekly submissions so you can make your picks from anywhere in the country. Winner's Circle Proxy is VSiN's preferred proxy service. So one trip to Vegas is all it takes. Play all season long from anywhere in the United States. You can schedule your appointment now at winnerscircleproxy.com. And Jens Lewis, as you know, I'll be making that pilgrimage to Las Vegas next week. Our guy Tom will be standing by so you and I can sign up for a second year of millions. We're excited to do that. And we got our proxy through our guy Mike Palm, who's the best. And Mike joins us now here on the Progressive Guest Line, of course, the VP of Operations at Circa the D and the Golden Gate Casino. And Maestro, good morning to you, sir. With this Winner's Circle Proxy already set up now, are you already seeing guys and gals running to the window to not only sign up for those proxy services? How is business so far for the three big contests that Circa has?
You know, Dave, and good morning, Dave and Jensen. It's been good. I was just looking at the report yesterday, and, you know, we've got months now to sort of sweat the numbers, but we're right on pace with the million where we were last year, and Survivor is actually got about 40 more right now than it did at the same time last year. So, you know, we sort of look at it a couple times a week right now, and then as we get into late July and August, we start looking at it more frequently, and then daily, and charting all this. I know Derek likes to sweat, but I don't think there's going to be much of a sweat this year.
I don't think so either. And I know you're bullish on the Grandissimo entries too. So excited to see what that final number will look like. The final number is 4-0 in advantage of the Vegas Golden Knights. What a sweep this was for VGK over Colorado. Mike, I know we talked a little bit about looking at the handicap. Was Vegas as viable as a live dog? 28-1, 30-1 to sweep this series. This to me was a bit more of an eyebrow raiser than I think maybe people previously anticipated.
I'm still surprised that we didn't get more pushback from the Abs. Game one, Vegas. I thought Abs outplayed him in the first period, and then Vegas outplayed him probably the next period and a half, and then the Abs made the big rally to pull short. The Abs had the 1-0 lead going to the third period in game two, and Vegas sort of shocked them with a couple quick goals and stole that game. And then game three, you're up 3-0 after the first period, Colorado. You don't score again, and Vegas comes back and wins, and then really a lucky goal with 2 minutes to go on a deflection, or they would have got shut out in game four. I thought the Abs, who hadn't lost two games in a row, that they let in all year, hadn't lost three games in a row at all those things that had happened, all season long, they'd won 45 straight games when they led after two periods. All those things went out the window in this series. And I get Cale Makar's the best defenseman in the world, and they missed him in the first two games, but that performance is still pretty inexplicable.
Yeah, somebody sitting on Avalanche tickets, I felt the burn of that one. That was shocking to the system, not just losing, but losing in the manner in which they did. VGK is now plus $1.30 to hoist Lord Stanley's Cup, and Mitch Marner is the short shot right now to win the Conn Smythe at about plus $1.65. 35 cents doesn't feel like a massive difference in the marketplace. I know sometimes people don't want to leave money on the table, if you will. But, Mike, where would you go there? Would you just play VGK if you like them to win? Looks like it's going to be Carolina up 3-1. Or do you say, man, the way Hart's been between the pipes, I don't know that I want to play Mitch Marner to win the Conn Smythe.
Took the second game, right? Over Colorado. I bet Carter Hart at 40-1 because, like you, Dave, I had Colorado tickets and I had nothing on Las Vegas. It's hard for me to believe that Carter Hart is still north of 20-1. Now, Stormy argues that the voters may ignore his performance and not want to vote for him because of the trial. Where they were acquitted in Ontario. I don't know. Maybe Jensen has thoughts on that, as whether he thinks the voters would say, even if Carter Hart deserves it, I'm not going to give it to him because he stood trial for misconduct.
Yeah, I'd be fascinated with that kind of narrative. You wish, Mike, that things would remain on the ice, but we are human beings, and obviously that'll be something that would be an interesting layer once we see where the votes are, and of course the series, how it plays out, will have a lot to do with that as well. How it's played out in your eyes for Carolina here, a backup off the mat after Montreal drudged them in game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. This has been, as Dave says, one-way traffic in favor of Carolina and Rod Brindamore's club. An absolute blitz out of the gates, those three goals early, putting it to bed at the Bell Center. Series over in your eyes, and just a matter of is it over in five, or do we get Montreal actually having a little resistance to try and get it back north of the border?
Well, I don't want to say over in five because they play much better on the road, Montreal, and I've talked about this, that there's a lot of pressure on them playing in the Bell Center. However, I'm very disappointed that Montreal has not adjusted their game at all. They continue to want to play this defensive, very few pucks on net style. You're not going to beat Carolina having 11 shots on goal. I mean, what was it, 9 minutes before they got a shot on goal last, did they think they were going to win by an own goal? You can't do that. And the whole system of Carolina is meant to generate shots, right? Brenda Moore has built this system where they forecheck, and put rubber on net. And that's what they do. They what was it last night? 43-16 or some ridiculous number. You can't win like that. You're just not going to win like that. The margin of error is too thin. I give them a puncher's chance because they're on the road. I don't think they could win a game six at home. So I think it will be Carolina and Las Vegas in the Stanley Cup final.
And a guy like Marty St. Louis, going back to his playing days, he knows how important it is to get rubber on the netminder. They just can't do it. 19 saves is all Freddie had to have last night after 11, as you pointed out, Mike, in the previous game. Any liabilities here in the Stanley Cup Finals? Does Vegas hurt the home product? I know everybody's rooting for Vegas, obviously, back home.
No, you know, Jeff Davis did a really great job of booking to the favorites and to the best teams. So, amazingly, going into the Stanley Cup Finals, going into the Stanley Cup playoffs, the four teams we needed were Colorado, Las Vegas, Tampa Bay, and Carolina, right? He booked to need those teams. So Montreal is the loser. If Montreal were to win the cup, that would be a bad result for us. The other loser was Minnesota. Those were the only really two outcomes that were bad for the book. Everything else is good.
Mike, as we kind of look at where we are for the NBA Finals, at least where you guys are, I know Dave added a Knicks ticket a little over 2-1 to win it here. What do you expect tonight, and where do you guys sit with what the Spurs need to try and force this thing to a game seven back to OKC?
Yeah, it's really tough, right? I mean, they've really got to run their offense through Wemby to have a shot in these things. They can't come down and have these guards just shoot. They have to try to get inside in the post and at least make Oklahoma City pick up fouls. Oklahoma City is just, you know, your two-time reigning MVP has not even played a good series. And they're up 3-2. It's really tough. Now, can San Antonio win at home? And you had a 17-0 lead in game three and ended up losing by almost 20. So it's a really tough spot. I had friends that had, you know, have pretty nice future positions on OKC. And after game one, they said, what should we do? I said, just let it play out. If this young Spurs team beats you, they beat you. I usually believe in monetizing. I just didn't believe they could beat Oklahoma City four times. And that's not to say it couldn't happen. But I think it's a really tall task to have to now not only win game six, but then win game seven in Oklahoma City. And the look aheads for us, OKC is about a -390, -$4 favorite over the Knicks, and the Spurs would be about -250.
Very quickly, where are you in coaching in the NBA? Because I didn't, you know, I don't know how much I put into it. And then I saw Kenny Atkinson and the Cavaliers and some of those comments, and I went, man, maybe Mike Brown really, we should talk more about the job Mike Brown's doing and Mark Daigneault has done there at OKC. Where are you on that with, say, a guy like Mike Brown? Do you trust that he's going to be able to push the right buttons here for the Knicks, whomever they play?
We can't complain so far. They've steamrolled everybody. I've never been high on Mike Brown, but Kenny Atkinson might be headed to Oklahoma City. He thinks they won that series.
I think they're still up analytically. We are going to get what's on the maestro's mind next, because Palms Pressing 3, it's straight ahead.
You're tuned in. VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books, on this Thursday. And as we do each and every Thursday, Jensen Lewis, it's time for you to be on your toes because we don't know what's on his mind. We're going to find out right now in Palms Pressing 3.
Pressing? Yes, I say it's pressing.
This is Palms Pressing 3.
Now, my mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
All right, Jensen, we know the baseball clubhouse over the long season becomes a family as you're around mostly the same teammates, the same coaches, and the same media for 7+ months, and at the same time, constantly dealing with pressure, failure, travel, and keeping your position in the lineup. No matter what's happening in your outside personal life, you're expected to show up, keep it light, and just be one of the guys. How emotionally exhausting is having to keep your chin up 24/7, 365? Have you ever felt like there were parts of yourself, anger, fear, vulnerability, even opinions, you had to bury just to fit into the daily professional baseball to exist? And over time, does living with that emotional mass start affecting a player's mental health to the point that they have to turn to drugs, alcohol, and other illicit and harmful activities just to cope and make it through the long season while still performing on the field?
It is probably the most exhausting and demanding industry, at least that is so much in the public eye. And I was just having this conversation the other day, Mike, with a couple of friends that I don't envy today's athlete with camera phones, the presence of social media. Anywhere you go, your life can be put on display at a moment's notice. And, you know, I came up in 2007, you know, really at the advent of, you know, when Facebook was coming to prominence, Twitter was just starting to get big. There wasn't TikTok, there wasn't Instagram. It really was still that time where camera phones, you know, on the razors and things of that nature, you know, there wasn't a way to really instantaneously get content out to the masses the way there is now. So, Dave, I can tell you, I don't envy, you know, today's athlete having to try and go in day in and day out, much more so or much less, however you want to look at it. The amount of vitriol directed at family members, not even the athlete, we're used to it. I mean, I've been doing this for, you know, 20, 25 years. People that are no names and keyboard warriors on social media never bother me. They never have. I think it is so unfair with how family members and friends and loved ones take the brunt of it. And they didn't even do anything. Like, they're not out there throwing balls and strikes. They're not, you know, causing havoc and, you know, things of that nature. So Dave, I know you've done it interviewing guys and you can see it when guys are going through it off the field. You do everything you possibly can to leave that outside the locker room, but we're human beings too, man. And sometimes you need good teammates to just put their arm around you and say, brother, it's going to be fine. You're going to be okay. And it, a slump means nothing when you've got issues at home and you're trying to deal with stuff off the field.
I do think in the modern era, there are athletes that are able to put aside social media and not let it bother them. And then there's guys like Kevin Durant that have burners and they are clearly frustrated by what people say online. So remember, it's not real life. But Mike, I could only imagine if we had Twitter around during, say, Reggie Jackson and Billy Martin, could you imagine those exchanges and those leaks that would come out of those clubhouses?
Okay. Question two, Jensen, let's talk a little college baseball. You'll be calling the regional at Morgantown starting tomorrow. Thoughts on a couple teams. Let's start with Florida. Your head coach at Vanderbilt, Tim Corbin, said of Florida after playing them in the SEC tournament, "I can't believe that this team lost 18 games. They look exactly like an Omaha team looks, currently 15-1. And then the other team I want you to talk about is Oregon. At the Big Ten tournament in Omaha this past weekend, John Savage, the head coach of the top-ranked Bruins, was asked who's the most dangerous team coming out of the Big Ten.
He said in his mind, it's Oregon. They have power hitting up and down the lineup and two shutdown starters. Oregon currently 35-1. Your thoughts on Florida and Oregon?
Well, I can tell you already with a 45-1 ticket in pocket on the Gators, saw them in person a couple of weeks ago in the series finale against Kentucky, who will be playing that first game in the Morgantown Regional against a really good Wake Forest team. Ingredients you need to win in Omaha are dominant front end starting pitching and being able to slug up and down the lineup with some good power arms in the back of your bullpen. If you just look up and down of what Florida can run out there and has battle tested a team in the SEC and really kind of crescendoing at the right time here at the end of the regular season into the tournament, Aiden King, Liam Peterson, as good a 1-2 punch as you're going to find. You've got Joshua Rittenour, who is up to a triple digits fastball out of the bullpen. Cade McDonald, who is kind of the mini Jack Caglione or Jack Cags 2.0. What he does in the lineup, as well as coming out and being a multi-inning reliever in their bullpen. And then you've got the head coach in Kevin O'Sullivan, who you might as well just make reservations for Super Regionals every year, the way that his pedigree is a veteran of getting not only to Omaha, but he's looking to add another national championship to his resume. If you look at the Eugene Regional, and they are the number 11 national seed, this is as good a backyard ball as you're going to get. You got two teams that absolutely despise each other. Oregon, the one seed in that regional. Oregon State is the two seed. And Oregon State, for a while, looked to be in contention to potentially host. So the fact that these two are headed into the Lion's Den there, Eugene, it's going to be fun. You look at Colin Clark, you look at Will Sanford, obviously what they have in the back end, Tanner Bradley, one of the great relievers, but also what they've got too in their lineup, Cooney and Smith and Maloney, an infield that will a lot of people won't want to get behind. I think that this is an intriguing spot because of who they match up against. The winner of the Eugene Regional will have to go to Austin if Texas, as the national number six seed, ends up getting through. And I think they should. Only UC Santa Barbara, the Gauchos, look like they could have a little resistance there. But even past that, I don't think they have it. Dave, you could be in for a really intriguing super regional matchup there if it's Oregon that gets through. But Oregon State, too, equal to the task. I just wish Oregon State would have Dax Whitney healthy, one of the top arms that will be drafted here, an arm injury derailing his season this year. But we've got a dandy set up, and there always are upsets, Dave. Upsets you don't see coming. It happened last year in Athens, the 7-seed Georgia. They get knocked out of their own regional, the one that I called. Duke ends up winning on an appeal play at first base over Oklahoma State. This is why we play. There's March Madness. There's May Madness. We're going to get a lot of it starting tomorrow afternoon.
Oh, I'm hoping that East Carolina can upset the apple cart. Somebody's sitting on a long shot ticket on the Pirates. So let's go ECU, and I'll root for my Virginia boys, whether it's UVA, Virginia Tech, and or VCU, all in the big dance as well.
All right, Jensen, final question here. The beginning of the season, you proclaimed the Giants' hire of Tony Vitello as next level thinking and declared that major league teams would quickly copy and hiring college coaches as soon as Tony had success. Giants are 22-34. They can't hit. They can't field. They can't run the bases. Tony Vitello, who's still living by the three-run homer theory, traded away to make one of the best defensive catchers in baseball in Patrick Bailey to your Indians. And the only thing everyone agrees on in Northern California is they wish the Giants would go back to New York. What gives here?
2 months in, I don't know if I can proclaim the Giants dead. We obviously know that they're dead last in run scoring, as you talked about. The pitching staff has not lived up to, you know, their end of the bargain here. Obviously some big injuries too. You have Logan Webb, your ace out, and some other bats that have not really been able to get things going. We've seen this movie before though, Mike. Remember my Cleveland Guardians, they were 15 and a half games out of the division lead. Last year they come back and they run down the Detroit Tigers. A little different having the LA Dodgers and the San Diego Padres in the same division. But yeah, Tony V's got to breathe a little bit, Dave. Holding on too tight, lost the edge. You know, the old start to Top Gun there with Cougar lost it, turning his wings. Hopefully that doesn't happen with Tony V. I got a feeling Buster Posey going to keep him around a little bit for at least the rest of this year.
I hope Gil Alexander was listening to that segment, waking up today, getting ready for a numbers game. But what? Did Mike say that they're going to move back to New York? What's going on with the Giants? Is it that bad already? Mike, you're the best. Can't wait to see you next week back at the mothership at Circa Las Vegas. Have a great rest of the week, and we will catch up again soon. But when we come back, Jensen, I have to talk more about what we might see tonight in game number 6 in San Antonio. Yes, everything's on the line for the Spurs. Can OKC move on to the Knicks? That is next with the Daily Docket right here on VSiN by the Books.